Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
What's up, Sharks fans? Welcome to episode 20 of Dudes on Hockey. Just got back from the Wild game on, it's Tuesday night. I'm so excited because tomorrow I get to go vote.
Dude,
what?
Dude, elections were today.
Today?
It was today.
Oh, I haven't been paying much attention. Oh, good thing, I guess John McCain doesn't need my vote. He's so ahead. I haven't really paying much attention to the news, though.
Dude. Obama won.
Oh. Oh, well. So much for my civic duty. I said duty.
What a great opener. Yeah. Actually, we were both thrilled. Congratulations to President Obama.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, a big day today, Mike. And you say it was our 20th podcast?
It's our 20th podcast. So Another historic day today, almost, if not more historic, than the first African-American president of the United States.
I would say 20 Sharks podcasts. Trump's African-American president, and I think Chris Simon would agree with us.
I believe he would. Also more exciting than this historic moment is the fact that we have finally booked our tickets to New Jersey. We are going to the Rock.
That's right.
To see the Sharks, February 2009, President's Day weekend. I know we've talked about it in a previous podcast, but this time, it's booked, baby. We're going.
It's fact. JetBlue.
Absolutely.
Here we come. This is the big question, Mike, and I know we talked about this earlier. Should we wear our jerseys? Do you wear the jersey to New Jersey?
I want to. The only reason I wouldn't, and this is something maybe our listeners can help us with, are we in physical danger if we go to the Rock wearing the away jersey? I don't mind taking some insults, hurled insults, boos. We stand up to cheer. People tell us to sit down. Curse at us, all kinds of stuff. I don't mind that stuff. But you went to a Raiders-Niners game not too long ago at Oakland Coliseum.
Right.
Which is a very hostile environment.
Absolutely.
Even to home fans, actually.
It doesn't matter.
And
you could get shanked at any moment, Mike.
You get shanked at any moment. And you saw a Niners fan just get waiting in line for a beer, just sitting there minding his own business, and he gets jumped by three guys who proceed to beat the crap out of him.
It's true.
True story.
Absolutely. I've been to a Dodger-Giants game in L.A., and someone threatened to shove batteries up my butt. That's a true story. I politely asked him what size.
Or double A?
So be gentle. Yeah. That's true. What a terrible way to insult somebody. Hey, you Giants fan, I'm going to shove batteries up your butt. That's the best you can do.
That's weak.
Really. That's pretty weak.
So anyway, if anybody knows out there, anybody's been to The Rock, and witnessed some Devils fans' conduct towards some away fans, drop us a line and let us know. Questions at dudesonhockey.com. Because, of course, we're going to root for the Sharks in our way, however way keeps us alive. Let's put it that way.
Safety first.
Yeah, safe.
The wives are coming on the trip.
That's right. The wives are coming, and I'm sure they wouldn't be so keen if they were going home alone because we're laying in a pool of blood at the Prudential Center.
That would be our last road trip, Mike.
Yeah, that would suck. That would suck. Our first and last, actually.
And we're not planning on that.
No, certainly not. So, of course, we're going to enjoy the game any way we can, but let us know. So let's get to the first matter at hand, which is tonight's game, which I'm not so sure we should spend a huge amount of time on it, because, frankly, the first two periods were boring as hell. I mean, I would say boring as sin, but sin is not that boring. And
but being a Minnesota Wild fan is a sin, Mike, because they are so criminally dull.
It's true. I mean, it is a brutal style that the Wild play. Effective? Yeah. I mean, they're 7-3-1 now or whatever they are.
Can you explain the style?
Well, the Minnesota style is what's known as a 1-4 style, which means they have one forechecker and they have four guys in the neutral zone. And the object of those four guys in the neutral zone is to funnel the puck to the boards and not to let the puck go through the middle of the ice under any circumstances. What that means is the Sharks or whoever they're playing, they're not able to generate any speed or generate any two-on-ones or any kind of jump going through the neutral zone, which generally causes a lot of turnovers and allows the Wild to hopefully occasionally capitalize on those turnovers and create an odd man rush going the other way. So the Wild's entire style is predicated not on their own skill, but on forcing mistakes by the other team and then capitalizing on those mistakes. Yes, exactly. Huh. I mean, it is the most boring style of hockey you can imagine. I mean, you could have almost anybody play that style, although a lot of teams have tried to play it over the years, let's be honest, and they failed because it takes a lot of discipline. Everybody on the team has to buy in. Everybody on the team has to play that style or else you pick it apart. And the Sharks were able to pick it apart tonight. So
it's a joke. I hate
it. It's not a joke.
I can't stand the Minnesota Wild. They irritate me.
I'm not saying I like them, but it's not a joke. It's an effective style. I mean, you know, it works. It's hard to win games in the National Hockey League, and they win a lot of games with this style.
Okay, Minnesota Wild is a joke, Mike. True or false?
Okay.
Minnesota Wild has a roster chock full of average players.
Outside of Gabrick, true.
Minnesota Wild plays a very constricting system.
True.
Minnesota Wild will lose in the first round of the playoffs because said system does not work after the regular season.
True.
After their coach with said system leaves, Minnesota Wild will fail.
True.
You just proved my point that they're a joke.
Crap. Walk right into that.
I can't stand it. It makes me mad, and this is why. Because they could win their division by playing this excruciating style.
Mm-hmm.
By outworking teams to victories. They get the 3 seed. Let's say the Ducks get the 6.
Yeah.
Sharks are the 2, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
And we draw the Blackhawks.
I know. I'd feel so cheated. I mean, it's a walk in the park for the Ducks. The Ducks are going to take them apart.
They will kill them.
Yes.
They'll destroy them, and they'll just be sitting there waiting while whoever has to play the 7 seed, probably a much better team,
mm-hmm.
might get pushed to 6, even 7 games.
It seems to happen almost every year. Last season, you know, Washington snuck in as a 3 seed on the last day of the season. They had a worse record than the number 4 and number 5 seeds, if I remember correctly. And so the number 6 seed had seemingly a relatively easy series. It didn't turn out to be that easy, but it seems this happens every year. I wonder, is this enough? If this happens again this year and the 3 seed gets crushed, is this enough for the NHL to take another look at this kind of this system of seeding teams into the playoffs?
No, because then what's the incentive to win the division?
That you win a lot of games, get a lot of points, and thus earn a good seed.
But if you're the 3rd seed, if the Wild are the 3rd seed, then what's the advantage to them? I mean, if they're the 3rd seed, but they're also not the 3rd best team. Then mm-hmm. I don't know how you fix it. I think that it is what it is, unfortunately. And until someone burns down their bus or something, they're going to keep doing it. I'm not suggesting that we should do that.
Of course not. I mean, it produces an interest. You know, there's some interesting, on the plus side, it produces some interesting matchups. As we've said, it may be some unfair matchups, actually. But, you know, that's what hockey's interesting. It's not supposed to be exactly fair all the time. I don't know.
The Sharks took almost 50 shots tonight.
Right. I predicted on the
their
blog.
Their system didn't even work.
It didn't work. And I predicted on the blog today, and I was almost right. I predicted the Sharks were going to win by 3 or more because I thought, and I said this on the radio show last Sunday, that the Sharks' system matches up well against the Wild and that the Sharks play a fairly patient kind of offense, but it's an explosive one. And if they can get through that trap, then they can create all kinds of scoring chances, which they did. Nicholas Backlund came up huge on a lot of occasions. As you said, they tied the home record for number of shots with 49. And damn it, they almost got that 4th goal, which would have proven me right and made me an absolute genius. But I was a little off.
Refs really messed some calls tonight, don't you think?
That one slew foot on Dan Boyle, I mean, that seemed obvious. And we were all the way on the other side of the arena from that play, all the way on the other side from that corner. And I could see that slew foot like night and day. I don't know what Bill McCreary was thinking.
His mustache got in the way.
I guess so. It's really gotten that bushy.
He missed some other things too. And what did you just say?
I said his mustache is that bushy, and I just completely derailed your train of thought.
Okay, I'm gonna keep going. I don't know how that rookie didn't get an instigator against Klo.
Yeah,
they really missed that.
He dropped his gloves first, and as Dan Rusinowski was saying on the post game, if you drop your gloves first and get an instigator, and he had a half shield, with a half shield, you get an extra 2-minute misconduct penalty. So you could make the argument that the refs gypped the Sharks out of an extra 4 minutes worth of penalties. Of course, you know, Klo made up for it by proceeding to beat the tar out of that dude. Poor bastard. I mean, he landed a bunch on that guy. And
you got to know who you're picking a fight with, I suppose.
And he got the Gordie Howe hat trick. So good for Klo. He got the first star, at least according to Jamie Baker.
Refs didn't miss that call on Ehrhoff, though, with 2 seconds left. That sure was worth stopping the play. Ehrhoff's laughing as he goes to the penalty box. It was a joke.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Yeah,
bad reffing tonight, but luckily we overcame. Yeah, Sharks win 11-2. Mike,
you can't knock it. That's 4 in a row, and
undefeated at home.
7-0 now at home, and the other two wins that have come this past week since our last podcast were two pretty tough games. Detroit obviously was a huge game.
That's a landmark game.
And Colorado, which is always a difficult opponent, regardless.
And they didn't even play that well in Colorado.
They didn't,
and they still won.
Right, and I think. You know, tonight we saw in Colorado, we saw that you can have some bad moments, and there were some bad moments against the Wild. The Wild prey on mistakes. The Sharks weren't completely mistake-free tonight, but the Sharks weathered the storm. They came back, and they won going away. And that seems to be the situation with Colorado as well. They are turning into be a great third-period team, a team with a lot of composure late in the game, and even a team that gives up a lead, like they did against the Wild, like they did against Detroit, and they don't panic. They don't lose sight of what they're supposed to do. And they have this confidence about them that we're still better and we're still going to win. And that's just something that I don't remember seeing in the Sharks team in a long time, maybe ever.
So as I was reminded by Brian Boitano, one of our loyal listeners and bloggers.
Very good.
He reminded us on the blog that, you know, last year's Sharks team would have lost these games last week, and this is different, and, you know, that my prediction of losing to Pittsburgh was wrong, and he was correct. That
yes.
We didn't drop that game, that this Sharks team is different. So my question to you is, what was the problem? Was it A, Ron Wilson, or B, is the new blood of Boyle, Blake, and Lukowich that transformed the team that much, plus McClellan? Is it the addition by subtraction, or is it the new players?
I mean, I hate to waffle, but it's a little bit, it's C, all the above, or D, all of the above, however many choices that was, because I honestly believe that Ron Wilson's system can win games for a team that, a little bit like Jacques Lemaire's system, it's a system that can win games for teams that don't have a bunch of top-tier talent. And he's proving that in Toronto. Toronto does not have a lot of talent, and they're winning games and staying in games every single night. And I think Ron Wilson deserves a lot of credit in that happenstance. The fact of the matter is, the Sharks aren't one of those teams that has mediocre talent. You know, the Maple Leafs arguably don't even have a single top-six forward. Alex Ponikarovsky, maybe. Who else they got?
Nick Hagman?
Nick Antropov? Maybe. Nick Hagman? Maybe.
I think Hagman could be considered a legitimate second liner.
Okay, so I'll give you one top six forward on that team, and they can win games and stay in games. How many top six forwards do the Sharks have? 6? 7?
Could even go as far as saying 8.
Yeah, exactly. So playing that system is a restrictor plate on this team, and I used the restrictor plate analogy when I talked about the Wild and their offense. And with McClellan and these new guys, the restrictor plate came off. These guys are free to create. And if you notice, and my friend Scott knows this today, all the guys on the Sharks leaderboard in terms of points are the fastest guys. Marleau, Seto, Pavelski, all these guys, they got speed. Mahalik scored two goals the other night. So all these guys that are allowed to streak up the ice are the ones that are being the most successful in the system. And I think Tom McClellan deserves a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely.
All right. But Colorado, you're right. I think they played a style that didn't really work. They had some real problems there, and Colorado took advantage, and the Sharks came back and still beat them. So, you know, I got to be honest, I was thinking about maybe predicting some losses coming up in the next week, but I have to reconsider, because the way they played against Minnesota tonight, Minnesota actually played a lot more physical than I expected. I expected them to play this 1-4 boring style, but they really were kind of chippy. I mean, they made a couple of really sort of, I don't know, marginal plays, and then Klo got back at him. I was hoping to see Shelley versus Bugard in the heavyweight bout of the season, but that didn't happen either. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, it's, the Wild got taken out of their game plan and looked a little clueless at the end. The big one this week is clearly Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they've been, you know, struggling and scrapping around a little bit, to see how the Sharks are going to deal with Ott and Avery is going to be interesting.
Right.
I'm curious to see how they're going to deal with, you know, Pest's times too.
Well, coming up in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Pacific Division, because Sharks fans, we got to keep our eye on what else is happening in the league. We can't just have tunnel vision with the Sharks, because what other teams do affects how the Sharks do and affects what the Sharks need to do. And it serves as a good preview to upcoming games. So we'll talk about it in a second. But first of all, we got to talk some emails, because that's the lifeblood of this show. You can send your emails to questions@dudesonhockey.com. And our buddy Ian sent us a nice email. We mentioned last week he called one of our podcasts above average, and we made a little joke out of that because it was funny. And he wanted to make sure that he meant that as a compliment, which, of course, we know, Ian, it's just funny when people say above average. And, you know, frankly, that's all we're shooting for. I mean, if we can get above or actually slightly better than mediocre is a huge compliment to us. So thank you very much for that. He also had a question in his email, and he says, with Gotch out and Kaspar back in the minors, the Sharks have brought Staubitz and McGinn. Actually, Staubitz is back down, but McGinn is still up. Do you think McGinn has a good chance of staying up, or is this just the Sharks' way of giving some of their prospects who can be sent down some experience? And if that's the case, who else can you see possibly getting some regular season action with the Sharks while the Sharks wait for Gotch and Mitchell to get healthy? So what's this? What do you think is going to happen with McGinn? And do you think the Sharks might bring up somebody else other than the guys that we've already seen?
I don't think they can bring up anybody else just based on the salary issues. But I don't think they're going to have a rotating door. I think McGinn has proven again tonight that he's a legitimate NHL player. He's going to be a regular on the team, I think, next year. And that this year, you know, depending on how Pleahall continues to play, if Pleahall struggles a little bit, I could see McGinn staying with the club. But I think what we had talked about earlier is this the situation around Pleahall and his waiver situation as far as if they needed to clear space is a little bit different.
That's right. So McGinn would not need to clear waivers. He doesn't have a lot of NHL experience, actually only 3 or 4 games or whatever it is. So if the Sharks wanted to send him to the minors, he wouldn't have to clear waivers, and thus the Sharks could protect him. That's not the case with Thomas Pleahall. If we wanted to send Pleahall to the minors, he would have to clear waivers. It would make him available to every other team. I think the chance of him clearing are very good. There's been a lot of sort of high profile players that have cleared waivers this season, Kyle McLaren being one. There's others. But so I don't know if that's a huge situation, but my thing with McGinn and Pleahall is you want to make sure McGinn continues to develop as a player. And if he's going to be on the bubble in terms of being a healthy scratch, getting 3 minutes a night, he's not getting a lot of minutes even now. I would rather have him in Worcester as a 19-year-old kid than play 3 minutes a night and 35 or 40 games here, because I just think that will arrest all of this work that he's been building with.
I think you're right. I think that's probably the plan. And unless he's out playing Pleahall, then he's probably going to get sent back down once Torrey Mitchell comes back. But the thing I like about McGinn is you can see in flashes that he's definitely more than a fourth line player.
Yes.
And
yes,
you know, it's possible that he could find a role on one of the top lines eventually. You know, he's got a scorer's touch. He's aggressive. I like him. I think it's great to see a future part being an important part of the season so far.
Right, absolutely. So, Ian, that sort of answers what we think. We both think that McGinn will likely be sent down again. You don't want to rush this guy's development. This guy's got a lot of skill. He's got good size. He's got ability. You don't want to put him in situations where he's not sure what to do, and he's not going to flourish. You got to put him in a place where he's going to get good. And that's what we did with Seto. Seto could have made the club last year. He didn't. He played half the games, roughly, 40-something games. The year before that, the Sharks could have theoretically brought him up, and they didn't. And look at what Seto's doing. Seto is maybe the best player on the Sharks this season. So
it's a different situation, because last year they had the cap room that they could sort of play the revolving door card. And this year they can't. They have to be very strategic about who they bring up and when. I think McGinn is here until the injury's over, and then he will be sent back down.
That's what I think so too. And I can't wait for Mitchell to come back, because that third line will just get another boost. It's just going to create even more competition amongst all these Sharks, most of whom are playing well. So
Even when healthy, I think Gotch is the odd man out.
I have to agree. Unfortunately, he's just not consistent enough in my view. Okay, let's go to the next email. This is from Chris from Boston, and he said, I just wanted to say how impressive the Sharks have been in the Pittsburgh and Detroit games. It's not the victories themselves, it's the way the team has played. Players like Vlasic, Pavelski, and Erhoff were able to match the skills and outplay some of the NHL's biggest superstars, something I never would have predicted at the end of last season. In my opinion, the only downside to the games is the sloppy play of Douglas Murray. This is worrisome to me because of the right series of injuries, we could have a third defensive pairing of Murray and Semenov, which seems like a liability. Do you guys think this is something that needs to be addressed going forward? And if so, do you think this is the biggest weak spot on the team? Keep up the good work, Chris in Boston. Of course, the first paragraph, definitely agree. The way that the Sharks are winning is one that inspires confidence in themselves and the fans, and it's making the NHL take notice, there's no doubt. In terms of Douglas Murray, yeah, the idea of having a Murray-Semenov line is very scary, although I doubt that that's the line that the Sharks would actually field. They'd probably switch up the pairing slightly. They wouldn't put those two together because that would be a liability. As far as Murray goes, I was looking around at some other lineups, and the fact is that Douglas Murray is a third-line player, Chris, and until he proves himself to move up other places. So I have to look around the league and think about the Ducks, for instance, when they won the Cup. Who was their third line? Dude, you know what the third line of the Ducks was when they won the Cup? You got an idea?
O'Brien and Huskins.
Or Joe DePenta.
Yeah.
So is Erhoff and Murray a better line than Joe DePenta and Huskins?
Yes.
Damn right it is. So if we're talking about Murray being a huge liability, if he's our best defenseman, you know, and he's playing on the top line with Boyle, then yeah, that's a problem. But this guy's a sixth defenseman right now. He's a fifth or a sixth defenseman. And you look around the league.
He's getting paid pretty well to be a sixth defenseman.
Next year.
Yeah.
Next year, not this year. Well, next year they're going to be expecting more out of Douglas Murray. So I hope he can deliver. But if you look around the league at these third lines, how many third lines, third pairings are better than this? Fister and Daly and Starr for Dallas, I would say is probably better. Lebda and Lilja in Detroit.
Wash.
Maybe, maybe not. Hainsey and Garnet Exelby in Atlanta.
No way.
Okay, maybe not. Bouillon and Georges in Montreal. I have to get the Josh Georges in there.
He can take a hit.
No, he can take a hit. How about Kalinin and Girardi for the Rangers? I would say that's better. So we're talking maybe a handful of teams that has a better third line pairing. If you look at the other guys, it's littered with guys you've never heard of. And maybe Douglas Murray isn't the most popular guy or well-known guy in the league, but the fact is he's a decent defenseman, and he's not a huge liability with the team. If there's injuries, of course the Sharks might have to do some juggling and figure out something to do. But the way it stands right now, I'm not all that concerned about Murray. I mean, you don't play him against Crosby. I mean, they tried it and it failed and he made a huge giveaway and he never played against him again.
Where I have to agree with Chris on is as far as if someone got hurt, like we had a scary moment tonight with Dan Boyle.
Yeah.
He crumpled in a heap.
Got slew-footed.
On the boards. And luckily he got up and he played the rest of the game. But, you know, that could have very easily have been, you know, broken ankle, you know, sprained knee, something that took him out for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in a situation where you have Semenov playing nightly.
Yes.
Playing often. And then you're now, what do you do? I mean, I think that his point is valid in some respect that, so you're going to put who? Erhoff with Semenov. And then you're going to put
Murray with
Murray with Lukowich. I mean, there's definitely a vulnerable pairing. Or do you break up Blake and Vlasic just so that you're not? I mean, I could see that happening. And the frustrating part would be is that there's really nobody, I think, down in the minors who's going to be able to come up and help us right away, mm-hmm. except for Kyle McLaren, who we can't afford.
Right.
Unless the Sharks made a trade. Now, if there was a major injury, we probably would see the Sharks backed into a corner where they would have to get rid of somebody so they could either bring Kyle up or get another player in return.
Well, if there's a major injury, like say to Boyle or to Blake, if they're placed on long-term IR, then the Sharks can get some cap relief and they could bring up Kyle McLaren in that case. If they're out for a week or 2 weeks and they're only on regular IR, the Sharks don't get any cap relief, and you're right, they'd be in this sort of horrible position.
The depth on defense is in the minors is a little bit concerning because it seems like Mike Moore isn't ready.
No.
He's struggling.
And Jocelyn is not of NHL caliber yet, if he's ever going to be.
Where's Dan Spang when you need him?
He's unfortunately gone. Oh. So let's talk a little bit about the Pacific. We only got a little bit of time left, but we need to talk about the Ducks and the Stars because the Ducks have really turned things around. They're winning games. They're beating good opponents, and they won tonight in a yawner in Los Angeles. They won in overtime 1-0. Way to help us out, Kings. Good job. Stupid. Eric Erzberg puts in a great performance, and then they can't score. Thanks, Kopitar. You're on my fantasy team. Joker. Anyway.
I saw Dean Lombardi wearing a Tavares jersey the other day.
Seriously, God. I think him and Don Waddell are going to have to mud wrestle for him.
No, I don't want to see it, but I kind of do.
You kind of do. You kind of do. So let's talk about the Ducks and the Stars. Playing the Stars on Saturday, so that sort of dovetails into a little bit of a preview there. You know, the Stars look lost. They've lost games they shouldn't. They got crushed by Boston. You know, they've lost a team. They've lost to St. Louis early in the year. They're losing to everybody, but we know this game's going to be tough. Turco always shows up for the Sharks. They just got Mark Parrish. I don't know if I get that move, but
they can't score.
Yeah.
They need help.
I guess that's true.
They're
guess,
having a lot of problems scoring. The team, you bring in a personality like Sean Avery, it changes everything.
Yeah, there was some fireworks with that this week. I mean, Mike Modano sort of made a post-game comment that implied that he doesn't like the way the team is going right now. He said something like, this is a joke, the way this happened, and if Dallas thinks they want me to play in this system, they better give me an off-ice job. And I think that was a direct shot at Avery. Apparently, he patched things up later, but is this already coming apart with Avery? Is it already coming apart? We're 12 games in, and Dallas is coming apart with Avery on board?
I hope so. I'm delighted.
I think we have to I think we have to consider the possibility that's what's happening.
They're stuck, too. No one will take him at that salary. No one will want him. They're stuck with Sean Avery for 4 years unless they buy him out in the offseason, and I think he's going to take the Dallas Stars right into the toilet with him.
So let's take this one step further. Is this showing that Brett Hull is not ready to be GM? He shouldn't have made that decision?
What did he do to prove that he is?
Well, he was given the job and the business cards, basically.
So, I mean, they could have given me the business cards. I don't know what he's done so far that has, you know, Brad Richards put them over the edge last season in the playoffs, I guess. I mean,
he played well.
Yeah. How's he doing so far this year?
Not so good.
No. So, I mean, it's sort of still the same middling player with a big contract that.
And Mike Smith is playing gangbusters in Tampa despite they have nothing in front of him. But he's like a 940 save percentage or something like that. I mean, the guy's lighting it up. He's playing well.
It's too early to pronounce them dead, but. Yeah. I think that I can hear the gurgling around the heart.
I hope so. It'd be nice. Did you pick him to miss the playoffs again this year?
I did.
We picked him last year. Way wrong. You went again this year. I pushed out. Said they're going to make the playoffs again, but you may prove me right.
We'll see. Saturday, I wish I could go. Unfortunately, I'm missing that game. But that's going to be a tough one. Real tough, for sure. Real tough.
To be perfectly honest, I'm a little worried about the Blues. I mean, I hate to say it. This is a team that I think is in a similar mold as Florida. Florida sort of surprised us with their young talent. They got young guys, David Perron, TJ Oshie. They got young guys on that team. They're going to have a lot of jump, and I worry that we're going to fall into the same kind of trap that we fell into with Florida.
They're going to come out with a lot of fire, but at home, the Sharks don't lose a game like this. They win. We're going to win.
I hope so. Okay. So we're getting near the end. Let's go to the shootout. Big news, maybe the biggest news of the week. Martin Brodeur hurt, tore his bicep muscle. He's at 3 to 4 months. Good for you fantasy-wise. You got Kevin Weeks. But
I picked him up immediately.
How bad are the Devils now?
God, I don't know if I would say that they're bad. Weeks played great in his first game back. You know,
They gave up 20 shots in the first period.
I know. That's not his fault. The score is only 2-0. I think you got to give him a couple weeks here. Well, thank you.
Hey now.
But I think the Devils are still a playoff team. I think he'll be able to hold them over until Brodeur gets back.
I think they fade to the middle of the pack, maybe borderline.
I don't know if it's going to be because of Brodeur. I mean, they're hammered with injuries right now. Holik and Ralston out.
Yeah, that's true. I think they're going to sink. Okay, second story. Daniel Alfredsson signed to a 4-year deal. This definitely means he's sewn up in Ottawa for the rest of his career. Is that a good move for them?
I guess they're just going to tread water until their lungs fill with I don't know. I mean, keeping Alfredson, I guess, is good. He's the face of the franchise, but they're going to have to do something eventually. They're playing decently right now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can't remember what their record is.
I think they're middle of the pack. They're okay.
They're goaltending.
Now all the starting again?
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so next story. Zach Bogosian, a good young defenseman for Atlanta. Overlooked. He looked great in the preseason, looked great early in the season. Bad stroke of luck. Broke his leg. He's out. You know, can Atlanta catch a break here?
Hello? Ken Klee?
Yeah, bring him back.
Are you there?
Ken Klee, bring him back.
Did you see Schneider's a minus 14?
He plays for Atlanta.
I just think that's so funny.
You could like make a baby out of like Bobby Orr and Doug Harvey and he'd be minus 14 for Atlanta.
Wow. What if it was Bobby Orr and Todd Harvey?
Then he'd be plus 14.
nobody should be minus 14, Mike, this early in the season.
I guess you're
it's
right.
Embarrassing.
Okay, last and most important story.
Do you think he has a picture of Brian Burke in his home?
That he's like throwing darts
at? And he throws darts at it.
Oh my God, probably. Okay, last and most importantly, you are last in our fantasy league. Suck it.
I'm in it for the long haul.
Yeah, when Matt losing.
When Matt Sundin signs with the Ducks next week,
oh.
You know it's coming, Mike.
Dude, it's not coming.
Can you feel it?
No.
Brian Burke is going to destroy that franchise on his way out the door. He is.
Yeah. I almost hope it happens.
Kunitz to the Maple Leafs for their number one draft pick.
So they can sign Sundin.
Yeah, so they can sign Sundin. Something stupid like that. Something stinks. and it's not Scott Parker.
No. Well, that does it for Dudes on Hockey. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back again. Next week, same time, same place, and send us some emails, let us know what you think the show's doing, and fill out the poll on dudesonhockey.com. Thanks a lot.
Someone get me a Minnesota Wild jersey with the last name Clutterbuck on it.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.